everybody. This is Tracy, and I'm delighted you've joined me for this episode of Good Life Stories. I created this podcast because I believe we are all seeking connection, and what better way to do that than through story? So get ready. These stories are meant to suck you in. Welcome to Good Life Stories. Hey, everybody. This is Tracy Crowley, your host of Good Life Stories. And today I get to talk to the most amazing woman. Her name is Krista Krichmarek. And this first episode for her is talking about how her relationship with her husband is heavily influenced by Gomez and Morticia. If you haven't heard of them, please go look them up because it will make this episode much more entertaining. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Good Life Stories. This is Tracy, your host. And today I am here with Krista, and I believe I'm going to get this right. Krichmarek?
Yes, you got it. Perfect.
Yes, Krista Krichmarek Kemper. She did give me cliff notes. This is a good thing. I got to meet Krista because she knows a good friend of mine, Cammie Miller, who was a previous guest. She is an artist, combat veteran, mother, dancer, QA tech, researcher, army officer's wife, gamer, mechanical designer, essayist, and president of a mechanical engineering firm. Just to give you a little dose. And I love that one of the things she put in her bio was talking about having attributes that where you've read the Tao of Pooh at an impressionable young age of 12. And I think, oh, I love this. So, and being an infovore, I think the infovore is like the, oh, these are just such good descriptors. But anyways, Krista, welcome. Thank you for coming on my podcast
great
today.
To be here.
So we're going to dive right in. I asked Krista for her top three life stories. And her first one is talking about her amazing husband, Bart.
Yes.
And their relationship being similar to Gomez and Morticia. Can you tell me like how you got there and that started?
Well, the way we got there, what it started out as is we were having a lot of difficulties in our relationship. He is very high energy. He's always curious, always jumping to the new thing. He's always got ideas and dreams, and he's just kind of like, go, 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 do. And he loves everybody, and he showers everybody around him with gifts and compliments, and it's amazing. And I felt like I had to meet that energy, but I'm not.
That's not you.
That's not me. I can get there once in a while, but I'm like a sprinter, and he's the marathon runner with that.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of fights because I was trying to meet his energy, and I would burn out, and yeah, it would just kind of fall apart. And we were like, we both recognize this isn't working.
Yeah.
And us being nerds and science fiction and pop culture geeks, we were like, okay, yes, we need a, and engineer designer, we need a blueprint.
Yeah.
So we decide, what do we want our relationship to look like? And yeah, we thought about various pop culture references, and we were like, Gomez and Morticia.
So do you remember who any of the other candidates were?
We briefly considered the Joker and Harley Quinn, but we decided no.
Yeah, a little less healthy. Yeah.
Way less healthy. We talked about other couples like Picard and Riker. We talked about Riker and Deanna Troi, Ren and Stimpy. And Silent Bob, what is this going to look like? And part of the reason we ended up on Gomez and Morticia is because of him, because he was a nationally ranked fencer In the military, he was a combat engineer, so he plays with explosives. He's got this big old house filled with weird stuff. I mean, I found the paperwork for a Geiger counter in here. Nice. And he has a family cemetery, and part of it is in the spookiest spot in the cemetery, and he comes from a family of troublemakers. And all I really need to do is hold still and let him adore me.
Yeah.
And that was actually...
That's a hard space to be, though.
It is. I did not understand what it meant to just be and be adored. And I'm crying thinking about this.
Oh, I just get chills when you say that, though, because, like, I feel like there, I mean, it's just such a beautiful honoring of who you both are.
Right. And so, you know, he'll be the one, we joke that he'll be the one setting the explosives, and I'm the one, oh, that's beautiful, dear. That's wonderful. Here's some more. And yeah. I'm the one standing by the box of explosives, handing him more. Here, a little bit more, dear. Oh, yes, I need more.
Yes, some more C4, please. You know,
C4, yep.
Make it look like a bunny.
Yes. Make that crater nice and big for me.
Yes, exactly. I'd like a bigger crater, please, honey.
Yeah, and that's it. It was the hardest thing to learn how to do was just to. He didn't want me to meet his energy. He wanted me to accept his energy. And he was okay with my slower, more chill way of being. And once we got that vibe, it's been amazing.
It's been Gomez and Morticia. I love, like, when you describe each of you and when I think about, like, I don't think I had ever, I mean, I've always thought of Gomez and Morticia as, like, an item. So I've never really thought about, like, what happened before Gomez and Morticia got together. And I realized, like, oh, it was Gomez Adams and he married Morticia. Like, Morticia came into the family. Like, he was the guy with the house. He was the guy with the crazy family. And she was the addition, because I always just think of them together. And so it was like, oh, right, there was something before that, you know?
Right. So what sort of person, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but like that you got invited into that world.
Right.
And how, when I think about, I mean, like, just Gomez or Morticia just sounds so completely like you guys, because he's always that crazy running around something, and she just always, you know, I don't think there's ever a point where you see Morticia upset. Like, outwardly, like that vibration, mad kind of upset. Like, she can be mad, but, like, it's never a loud mad or a high energy mad.
Well, and the thing is if you really watch the show and the dynamics, Morticia's very gentle with him because she has the understanding that if she does, I can remember a few episodes where when she did express that she
displeasure.
Was happy. Displeasure, yeah. She could crush Gomez with that.
Yes.
She could absolutely crush his soul with just the slightest bit of displeasure.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to, but she did express her displeasure. She just didn't need to be really forceful about it. It was just...
Right. It was always just so quiet.
Right.
Yeah.
It was very quiet. And I actually didn't used to be that way.
Yeah.
But it, you know, settling into that role, I was able, yeah, okay, this is all I need. And I paid better attention to how Bart and I interacted. And yeah, it didn't take much for me to, you know, for him to listen to me when I voiced displeasure.
Yeah.
And then we could sit down and talk and work things out and move it around and work through it.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, once we found that role, it was like, yeah.
You know, oh, here we are. We're good.
We are.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's just so beautiful. And I love thinking about you guys, you know, the fact that you work together as well, you know, because I know lots of people don't feel that they could work with their spouse.
It's very strange. I have split him into two people.
Yep.
And there's a lot of people that don't realize we're married that we have worked with.
Oh, that's so funny.
I will talk about him as my engineer, and then I will talk about Bart as my husband, and rarely do the two meet.
Yeah.
Because we do have a lot, and here we can talk about work. Because we have noticed that when people realize we're married, they will start talking to him. And he'll be like, no, this is a contract negotiation. She's the president. She's the one signing. She's the one that's going to be making these decisions.
Go over there. Yeah.
Go over there. You need to talk to her. And for client meetings like this, we've actually worked out a whole kabuki theater.
Yep.
So when clients come in, they'll find me sitting at the conference table, and he'll be the one getting up to fetch coffee, to fetch pens, papers, anything that needs a body going out.
Needs a body moving. He's the one moving.
Right. So we pantomime this deference.
How funny.
And he and I, we will work out the particulars per client, but we really want to have the visual show that he is deferring to me in that case as president. There's other times where when he's speaking as the engineer, I defer to him.
Right.
And that's very important for people to know. It's just like, no, I'm the designer. He's the engineer. You need to be over there talking to him.
Yeah. But like, I love the reference to Kabuki theater, because like, that's so, you know, I feel like you've mastered the stagecraft of how to make sure that the focus is on the right person, you know, and that's a beautiful echo. But because it has to be, like, you know, there are so many built-in things that people don't realize they're doing.
Right. I wish we didn't have to do it. I wish it wasn't something we have to game out. You know, it works better here in the South, and it works really well with Asian clients.
Yep.
But with some of our clients in the North, they don't quite, we have to exaggerate it a little bit and make it even more theatrical for them to pick up on the social cues of.
I feel like they need a social hammer.
Yeah, pretty much. So that they can say that I am the boss and.
Yep. I'm sitting in this chair for a reason.
Right.
Wow. How bizarre. I love how stuff like that shows up in our lives, though. You know, you never quite feel that. So
we have fun with it, too. We were like,
sure.
We're gonna do this, and you know, it's kind of our Gomez and Morticia routine, you know.
Yes. Yeah. How do we do this? I love it. So you said that you were a combat veteran in the Army. Is that where you and Bart met?
No. He and I were serving at the same time. But he and I met much later on in life through science fiction.
Oh, funny. Tell me more about that. How did you meet through science fiction?
I had a profile out there, and I talked about the science fiction, you know, the things I like. And in there was, I said I was a Heinlein girl.
Oh, nice.
And so you would have to know exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah.
To ping on that and in some of the,
okay. Know, so for my audience that hasn't read Heinlein, what did you mean for him to receive by that?
Heinlein's women were strong. They were capable. Yeah. They were still feminine, intelligent, curious. They were peers to their partners.
Yeah.
In the books, there might be a little back and forth banter of the male protagonist trying to assert his dominance, and she'd be like, yeah, okay, whatever. Yay. And Bart saw that. And he understood what that concept was. And when he and I first started talking, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And part of my whatever is he had never been to combat at that point.
Yeah.
So, you know, him talking about being in the military, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You haven't been to combat. You're not somebody I consider a peer, even though, and I was out by then. But I didn't feel like he was somebody I could really talk to for lack of that experience.
Yeah.
And that changed when he got back from Iraq. He needed a lot of help. And his father and I kind of tag teamed him into getting him into therapy right away. And then it's like, okay, now we can talk. Now I can hear you up here.
Nice. Well, good job getting him into therapy, because I know that that's one of those things that really helps move the needle. So
yes. Yes, it is.
Well, that's awesome. So you guys, so it sounds like at that point you were connected to his dad and to him when he went to Iraq and came back.
Well, I didn't know his dad at that point. His dad was here in Louisiana giving it to him from one side, and he got it from me up in Seattle from the other side. This is what we need to do. And we, between the two of us, we goaded him into seeking therapy.
Nice. So when did you guys get together then?
Oh, geez. I think we first met in person, I want to say it was 2006.
Nice.
I think it was 2006. He was coming out to Seattle for a conference. And he and I had been talking a lot at that point. And he was like, yeah, I want to meet you. It's like, okay, cool. He's like, and I've got SolidWorks. I was like, SolidWorks? Okay. Because I had seen SolidWorks for the first time. This is my CAD program that I work with on American Chopper. And I thought that was the coolest looking design program ever. So I called Orange County Chopper, said, what is that? They're like, SolidWorks, how much? And the sticker shock was like, no, I'm never going to use that. So, God, was it? Yeah, maybe it was Norwescon. Norwescon 2006. I don't remember, honestly.
That's okay.
It was out for
a conference.
Yeah. It was Norwescon, so science fiction convention. Yeah. He was like, yeah, I'm going to be out there for Norwescon, and I have SolidWorks. It was like, okay.
We are down. Like, I love it.
He let me play with SolidWorks, and the way he tells it is, he was like, oh, I need this woman. I need to put her to work.
Yeah.
Because he's like, make a square. Now make a cube. Now make a circle. Now make a sphere. And I'm doing all these basic commands without having done a tutorial. I was like, oh, this is just kind of like Photoshop, but 3D. And he was like, no, it's more than that.
But you were just playing, having a great time.
And having a good time. And I got to use SolidWorks. And
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh my gosh, what a fun beginning story. I love that. I love that you met because of Norwescon. Like, that's just a fun thing. Okay, so one of the things that you put in when you were writing kind of your information before you kind of answered your three life stories, and I feel like these kind of echo each other, was, you know, your second was sort of the learning about differentiating between dreams and goals, and that said you left Washington to escape the high cost of living and ended up living a dream. Okay, so like, tell me, like, because that sounds like about where we are at in your story with Bart.
Yes, and the dream was vaguely connected to Bart, because he helped facilitate the dream. So this actually goes all the way back to high school, and it will make people who work in my community cringe. And I always love springing this story on people just to watch them cringe. I saw the movie The Abyss when I was...
Oh, I love that movie.
Right? I loved the movie
The Water.
The Abyss.
The water.
It was the technology, too. The technology shown. I was like, oh, my God, that's so cool. I would love to be able to do something like that. But my high school career was very much geared towards art. I was going to be an artist.
What kind of an artist are you, or at that point were you?
Everything. I was doing graphic arts. I was doing fine arts, painting, photography. I mean, my art teacher managed to fast talk the school into letting me out of PE so I could take art classes.
Nice.
And like every other month I was in an art show and I was taking the blue ribbons, and the school was like, okay, she's putting us on the map.
Yep. So let her keep doing it.
Yeah. I became the star artist. Like, they had the star football players, and I was going to go to art school.
Yep.
So when The Abyss came out, I saw that and I really regretted not pushing math and science, because I loved watching Jacques Cousteau as a kid and Nova and all those shows, but it didn't click to me that there's actually work in the deep sea.
Where you can go do those things.
Where I can go do those things. So there was that little dream. I set it aside. I'm going to go be an artist. That's my path. And things went sideways. And then here comes this guy who's an engineer. Yeah, SolidWorks. That's cool. Good starting point.
Right. And he has a cool program.
He has a cool program. And he had started in working on pressure vessels for saturation diving, like just before I came down. So these are the habitats and the diving bells for the guys that go down to the deep sea, where they have to use oxygen helium mixes to keep to live under extreme pressures. And that's one of the first jobs I was ever on. One of the big jobs was working on this equipment that was, you know, that's the abyss right there. So I stepped into my dream.
Quite literally. Were you at Cornish? Were you teaching at Cornish? What were you doing? You were still heavy in art when you met him, yes?
At the time I met him, I was in Cornish, but starting to realize that the school was very much geared towards kids right out of high school.
Yeah.
I was well out of high school. I was a combat vet. So I was maybe a little bit jaded.
Yeah.
Cynical. And I had a daughter that we needed to take care of. And a friend of mine said, hey, come work for me. And it was in IT testing software. So it was like school. And school at that point, frankly, was way too easy for me.
Yeah.
College was just...
It wasn't demanding. Well, with everything else you'd been through, that doesn't sound like something that would be hard.
No. This all kind of goes back and forth. My first 2 years of high school art class were extremely demanding. Shout out to Mrs. Watson and Mr. Davis. They put us through a ringer. But what I came out with was this intense art foundation.
Yeah, real foundation.
Real, real solid foundation. Like, the first year, you didn't get to touch color. It was all black and white, all composition, lights and darks. If you got to touch color, you only got to touch one color.
Right.
And then the second year, you rarely got to touch black or white. It was all color theory.
Yeah.
And then I moved schools, and my art teacher, when I moved back to Washington, didn't know what to do with me.
Right.
So he contacted my teachers in Massachusetts and were like, what do I do with her? So they gave him their third year curriculum. And so third year was all three-dimensional.
Wow.
And then fourth year was supposed to be independent study, but I also did drafting. I did photography.
Yeah.
Graphic art.
Nice. Yeah.
So, yeah, by the end of high school, I had what?
You had the equivalent of your first 2 years of college art.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got to, I walked into Cornish with like two duffel bags full of costumes, and it was raining, and I had a Viking costume,
yes,
Viking helmet on.
Yep.
And the umbrella perched on the Viking horns, because I was going into I was going in for costume design. So
yep.
Girl with the wild hair and the Viking hat with the umbrella perched on it. They were like, yep, you're our girl.
You're our people.
You're our people.
Welcome. So you basically left art school
to go
be with Bart and go work with him.
Oh, no.
Literally.
No.
No. Like, what happened? Okay. Well, how did you get there then?
Art school into
yep.
IT. Being a QA tester in IT. And I did that for, I want to say, 6 years until my son was born.
Yeah.
And then I was a stay-at-home mom for a while. There's a good number of years.
Yeah. Nice.
Was a stay-at-home mom. And I think I met Bart. My son was like three at the time. And
yeah,
I was not single. I thought we needed to get out of Seattle because the cost of living was killing us.
Yeah.
And things just, I don't want to get into the details of it. Things,
no, but that's okay. Yeah. You were ready to leave Washington.
I was ready to leave Washington. Went on ahead thinking my husband was going to follow me. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to go back to Seattle, so I stayed here. And yeah. that was stepping into this world I never thought I could have, because
yeah.
I don't math very well. I'm an artist. I'm an artist.
Yep. Yep.
But in intervening, what Bart saw, however, was somebody who had done construction, somebody who had worked on cars, somebody who had built armor. Somebody who
yep.
had made knives, somebody who had color theory. I used glass. So I had chemistry. I had all these
yeah.
things, all these skills that if you tried to put them on a resume, would be like, okay, these are all hobbies. But he saw them as skill sets needed for a designer.
Well, and for you, like the knowledge base, like you were saying, you were the infovore.
Yes.
Like the infovore, when I think about you listing those off and when I think about what you do today, which is, you know, working on submersible, you know, that you help write code and standards for pressure vehicles for human occupancy, which are submersibles, driving systems, and hyperbaric chambers. Like, what? But like when you start listing off that list of the, oh, right, chemistry, gas, metallurgy, like all the things you taught yourself, basically, by being fascinated in things and taking classes here and there, however that knowledge came in, you know, that you would have to understand a lot of those things
yeah.
to even start to do what you do. And I feel like when I was thinking about your profession before, I just think, wow, like the engineer side seems so important because obviously, you know, the math of the thing matters, but understanding all the elements that go into the design as well.
The theory.
You know?
Yeah, just the
yeah,
theory.
The
and plus
theory.
I was raised by an engineer, so
yeah,
I had that as a base as well. Like my
yeah.
father would bring drawings, plant drawings home, and I loved to do mazes as a kid, so he would put these piping diagrams on the table and give me a red pen and say, okay, see if everything connects. Oh, right, I can do that.
Oh, how fun. What a neat way to do that.
So I was his drawing checker, and I didn't even realize that when I was a kid.
Well, when you see what your kids are good at, it's always nice to be able to shine a light on it and use it too, you know. And what a neat thing for you to look back on and say, wow, that was actually this other thing. It wasn't just my dad figuring out a cool way to engage with me, you know.
Yeah,
that's in and of itself pretty amazing. yeah, free labor. Yeah, kids are good for that, you know. So, you know, when you think about like your job right now, so this isn't kind of in your life story stuff, but when I look at, you know, I think about the community you must live in, you know, this, the people who work on the hyperbaric chambers and the stuff you're working on, like, is that a small community? It feels like it's small.
It is really okay. Small. I know, you know, I mean, in the United States itself is small, but the world community of PVHO is small. It's just there's only so many people in it.
But like how many companies, if you could just kind of guess off the top of your, like, is it under 20?
No, it's more than that. I, you know, off the top of my head, I'd say there's maybe 50 total.
50. Okay.
And
total.
That's
not very many. Yeah.
That's including hyperbaric chambers. Maybe more around the world. But
it's also they're smaller too. That, like, yeah. You know, when you say 50 companies, you know, we're not talking about companies that have hundreds of thousands of people who work for them.
Right, right. You know? I can't think of any that would be more than 50 people.
Wow. Yeah, so if you had, even if we just did really gross broad stroke math, 50 companies with 50 people each, even if they all had that, which they probably don't, that would be a maximum of 250 people.
Yeah,
I love the idea of the, small. We don't have to be accurate. It's mostly just trying to help my listeners understand. Like, I mean, I think we know that this is a small world, but like, it's a really small world. Even if it was
100 companies with 50 people, all over the world.
It would be 5,000 total?
Yeah, well,
in the world? That's not, you know.
Well, and the thing is there's the people who build the chambers. There's the people who build the gas systems. There's the people who build make the windows.
And I'm thinking more your part of it, like the people who are doing the design, the project level stuff, not because you feed a whole bunch of industries, like, right, you know, all the metal, all the tubings, all the wires, all the whatever. There's a lot of people involved when you go out there. But like just the little world that you live in.
Just the little world I live in. Not that many.
Small. Which is so cool. Like, what a fun place to get to play every day.
It is. I have times where I'm like, I have to push back from my desk and go, I get paid to do this. Wow. Yeah. This is awesome. I'll admit there are days where I have to push back from my desk because I've gotten a cold chill down my spine because I realize what being wrong means. Yes. And I have to step back and go, okay, I need to think about this because it's terrifying.
Yeah.
What being wrong, it's great to be right, but oh, we got to think about what being wrong means too.
Well, so for my listeners, because I'm sure some of them are understanding you talking about underground chambers for humans, like what does wrong mean there? Like what, I mean, I think I know, but tell me more about what wrong means.
What wrong looks like, we have a very recent example of it. The Titan submarine going down and imploding. Wrong means instant death. And that's a very, very sobering thought for me on a regular basis. You know, I'm sitting here, I got the chills right now thinking about it. I don't want to ever be that wrong.
Right. Yeah.
It's terrifying. And that little hint of terror is kind of what keeps us, that's what keeps us honest.
Yep.
You know, we've actually had to get rid of engineers because we don't think they're scared enough.
Yeah.
They might be great engineers, but it's like, no, dude, you're not scared enough of what you're doing. You're not taking this. It's not that they're not taking it seriously. It's that they
you have to be a little bit afraid.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, like that hint of terror, not just like, oh, this is important or, oh, this is a big deal. This is the, like you said, backing up from your desk with a little chill that just ran down your spine of the, oh, wait, what I was working on wouldn't have worked, and wouldn't have worked means dead people.
Dead people.
You know?
Yeah, I mean,
just
I'll tell this to people that what we do is a matter, is really is a matter of life and death. And they, people who don't work in engineering don't really understand what that means. I mean, it's a plane falling out of a sky. It's a building falling down. It's a bridge collapsing. It's a ship sinking.
Right.
It's a submersible imploding. So, you know, like doctors can kill people one person at a time. Engineers can do it in mass. But it's still, even when I get those cold shivers, I have to step away, take a cold drink of water, just walk away for a little bit. And every time I do that, I think, do I really still want to keep doing this?
Yeah.
So that's a decision I have to make every single time I work on a project or even, you know, keep the company going is,
yeah,
do I want that level of responsibility in my life? What gives me the right? I ask myself, what gives me the right to take on that much responsibility? And I really don't have a good answer for that. It's just, well, somebody's going to do it. Okay.
Might as well take somebody who's really good at it.
I'm scared enough. Okay.
Yep. I'm scared enough. I'll try. Yep. Yeah. Oh, wow. I love that. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that, Krista. That was I love. I mean, what you do is just so fascinating. I have kind of a, I don't know, Sam, if you're listening, I have an adopted niece. She's working in oceanography. She's a marine biologist.
Oh, yeah, we had awesome. A
good laugh about marine biologists. She's out on a boat and she's living her dream life. It's so fun. But like thinking about, I need to tell her to like, listen, you'll love hearing about Krista because she'll just love that.
We've actually done a little work for the Alvin. She'll know who the Alvin is.
Nice. Nice.
So we know the Alvin people over at Woods Hole.
Yep.
We know there was the Titan submarine, then there's the Triton submarine. So we know the Triton people. So you name a deep sea submersible, we know the people who work.
You know them. So
she should know who the Alvin and Woods Hole are for marine biology.
Nice. Nice. I love it. Thanks so much for listening to Good Life Stories. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit our website at goodlifestories.com for more show notes and additional episodes. Please subscribe and consider rating and reviewing the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts to help others connect to us. Who do you know with a good life story? I would love to hear from you. Good Life Stories, creating connection, one story at a time.